Going on, everyone. This is the Go Long Podcast live at Hamburg Brewing Company. This is kind of our sweet spot in the week now, right?
We're settling in on a good time. It works for both of us with kids. Hard to believe.
Right.
But we have to actually make adjustments to our schedule, and this works.
You got to align the naps, right? That's a sweet spot.
And we should be napping right now, right? You're supposed to nap when your kid naps, but hey.
It's Cully Week, you know? When it's Cully Week, you got to step it up a notch.
It's what everybody's talking about in the NFL right now. Everybody's talking about Cully's return to Buffalo. I tell you, I wrote about a little bit on the Monus Report on Go Long today, but I really do. David Cully is one of the best people you'll ever meet.
Right.
He takes time. If you're a scout, if you're a visiting coach watching practice, he will spend time with you. The history, when you study what he's done and his whole history of his career, just really impressive guy. Really great golfer, tennis player. Oh, yeah. And he'll let you know, too. He likes to talk. But this is going to be fun this week to see how the Bills treat a rookie quarterback. Like, I know we've been talking about rookie quarterbacks a lot, but, you know, Bill Belichick's famous for going against rookie quarterbacks and shutting them down. And McDermott definitely will take some pride in shutting Davis Mills down this week. And he will. But anyway, I think this is going to be I think this is another good game for the Bills to put up some numbers. And their schedule's been nice here right now.
Well, suddenly it's the easiest schedule in the NFL. Statistically, put out there this week. And before the season, I remember looking at it thinking, tough schedule.
You're thinking maybe Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even Tyrod. Even if it was Tyrod. Now we'd be talking about a nice little story this week.
They're deprived of Fitz and Tyrod.
Oh, we missed out on it.
You know,
that's a good point. I forgot about Fitz too.
But yeah, the Bills will probably win big. We'll touch on that a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, I think this podcast, which is brought to you as always by Hamburg Brewing Company, drinking a little Hoptimonium here. Come on in. Hoodie season.
Just like that, it goes right to hoodie season.
Gotta love it.
I like
hoodie and brewery season.
I like it.
So we'll talk Brett Favre for sure. Bob McGinn has his two-part, 10,000-word series at Go Long. He talked with Brett. He talked with Ron Wolf. He talked to Ken Herrick, the scouts, all over the league. And it's only for subscribers, so you have to become a paid subscriber at Go Long to read it. It's phenomenal. It's maybe the best piece of content I've ever consumed when it comes to the player that we both idolized as a kid, Brett Favre. You're going to read stories you haven't heard before. And that's tough.
No.
You know, there's a book written on him by Jeff Perlman. His Hall of Fame speech was that marathon, epic, brought tears to your eyes kind of speech that you remember where you were when you watched it.
Yes.
The documentaries, the stories. I mean, I sat down with him in 2014. There's so much in this series that I never knew
and never
heard of, which made it a lot of fun to work with Bob.
Is coming from your side of it and Bob's, like for you to read stories on Favre and not know that, do players, like why would Bob know all this? Is it just Bob doing research or does Favre have a respect for Bob?
Yeah.
Maybe that, is that how it works? I mean, you try to wonder, how does Bob get this stuff?
It's a combination.
Yeah, all that. Okay.
If I've learned anything, like I've said on here, he was like a Green Bay dad.
Yeah.
Right.
For
4 years living in Wisconsin, I'd go to his house for our podcast, but we would just hang out too. I mean, honestly, God, when I broke up with my girlfriend, like first instinct, go to Bob's. We went to Bob's, cracked open some beers. So he talked about it for like 5-6 hours. Pat, his wife, was incredible.
Counselor. Mentor.
But anytime I was over there, it was like something new would just completely blow me away. I mean, his office has like physical files on files on files. I mean,
like an attorney's office.
It is. I mean, the McGinn files. So that's the Brett Favre series is part of. Since 1985, he has scouting reports. And not his own. These are people in the NFL, like yourself, Jim.
Because they used to write them, and then he would get copies of them.
Trusted him.
They trusted
him.
And
he got in early with a lot of these scouts, and he's got files and files on every single player drafted in the NFL since 1985. So when we're trying to think of who we should do a piece on first to Go Long, it's Brett Favre. And he covered Brett from day one. He saw every pass he's ever thrown. He was there 92 against the Bengals when he takes over for Don McKelskey.
I remember the game.
He was there in the 2009 NFC Championship when your New Orleans Saints
beat the bloody hell out of him.
And I think Brett does. I think there's a lot of that trust. I think he does know where Bob's coming from and appreciates.
Yeah.
But me and Bob approach the job similar but different. Like, I'm kind of more of the, you know, storytelling, the human, like the non-X's and O's stuff.
Right.
And he does a lot of that really well. But his X's and O's and how he sees the game as a scout, players really appreciate.
Yes.
I think Favre remembered that when he called him for this. But then it's the research, too. I mean, he was pulling out quotes from his files from years ago for this series. And not to give too much away, but, like, I really didn't know the extent of that hip injury that he suffered in that car accident.
That's scary.
Out of Southern Miss.
And then the other part, that's scary. And then the Glanville stuff. You know, there's just, like, to think that you take a quarterback in the second round and the head coach hates him.
In the moment he hated him. Like, Ken Herrick, they take him and he's excited that they're getting Brett Favre. And Jerry Glanville is pissed.
Well, I did see that in Buffalo when we told Greg Roman we took Cardale Jones. Greg Roman was basically just said, nodded his head and
that was it.
Pretty upset, yeah.
When you wanted Dak Prescott.
Well, that Greg Roman would have been happy with Prescott. That was kind of our control on that one because he went before us. But anyway, I have seen it where a coach does get upset on a draft pick. And that I can remember that.
Which is crazy because
he was right.
Any draft pick, you know, you guys tell us that everybody was on the same page, right? It was a Bills pick. I can't believe that anybody would.
We there was, you know, like we said, we knew it was a boom or bust type gamble, but it was a compensatory pick that we couldn't, you know, we're like, this is a good one, just take a shot on a QB with some physical skills. But
that hip, it was the same injury that ended Bo Jackson's career. And they even when he got to Green Bay, Ron Wolf waived the physical clause, like, because he just wanted him that badly.
It's incredible.
And the doctor give it away a lot, but
there's
a lot in there. The doctor in Green Bay told Ron Wolf, like, look, he's 4 years tops. I don't even know if I can't pass him. That doctor did not last in Green Bay. Dr. McKenzie took over, and he's been there ever since.
I wonder.
And Brett Favre started more games than anybody in NFL history.
It makes me think of the doctor in Miami that didn't approve Drew Brees' shoulder when Saban was there, and then we got him in New Orleans because we approved it. Now, I don't know how that works medically sometimes, how some teams say he's okay, some teams don't. That, the medical stuff is fascinating.
Yeah.
It really is. And to hear that go that far back with how they were okay with his hip, that is just...
Well, you know, when Tyrod Taylor is punctured in the lung...
Like, how? Do we ever get a real story on that?
You know what's crazy, though, Jim? And I won't say who it was, but this come a longtime NFL veteran who may or may not have been in Buffalo with you.
Yeah.
He texted me back after that, and he said, yeah, that happens all the time. Because these doctors, they've been around forever. You know, they've been with these teams since the 80s, and they're not finding new ways to do things, to do injections, to do surgeries. Everything is so old school. You know, some doctors, I think like McKenzie in Green Bay, he's very conservative, but he's up with the times. He's smart. He's known as one of the best, but there's a lot that just don't know what the hell they're doing. I mean, think about it. Think about hernias. Like, you know, we've had all these stories about hernias with players in college, and the colleges, LaVisca Chenault, Damar Hamlin, same thing. Like Pitt for Hamlin and Colorado for Chenault. Like they didn't understand what it was.
That is scary.
And it lingers and lingers, and it's tearing off the bone. And they both went to the same doctor in Philly known as the crotch doc.
Oh, yeah, the crotch. I hear about him.
So you've heard of, but he's like the one guy that actually really knows what's going on. Like, I can't believe with everything we know, teams can still screw it up as badly as they do.
Carson Wentz earlier this year in training camp, it was never going to play, right? Oh my gosh, Wentz is done. Starts right away. It's always very confusing.
Yeah.
But I guess it's just like being a coach or a GM. Like, you know, we all get stuff wrong. Like, we mess up draft picks. Coaches mess up play calls. You know, you hate to think the medical side of it can be wrong, but they have the same issues.
Brett Favre started more games in a row than anybody in NFL history. It worked out, and I just want to pull up something real quick, Jim, because I think
I could talk Favre all day.
And it definitely segues into the game of the week, for many reasons. Certainly. But, you know, what I just loved maybe more than anything in Bob's series, and I think this is kind of what drew us to us, I mean, millions of fans, to Brett Favre, is the style of play and the uninhibited passion that he played with. You couldn't wait for Sunday.
No.
You didn't know what the hell was going to happen. He might throw a pick six that's going to crush your soul. He might come back in the fourth quarter, you know, rifling at 100 miles an hour to Antonio. You just didn't know.
And when did you, as Packer fans, because I always felt like growing up as a Packer fan, middle school and high school, I always said every year I already knew it. It was going to be 8-8. That last week, maybe there's a chance that you needed five things to happen, right, for Green Bay to sneak in the playoffs if they won the last game. It was miserable. All of a sudden, you get this quarterback, finally, that is just all of a sudden, we have a quarterback that's running his mouth to Warren Sapp. And I'm thinking, wait, who does that? What quarterback's talking to a D-tackle? Like, fascinated, right?
That's what I want to bring up here. So Bob spent a lot of time on that passion and why it was so different. So he wrote, What Favre never lost during a career that spanned two decades was his childlike love for competition and his empathy for friend and foe alike. Favre had been a Packer for only a few months when Rich Moran, a veteran guard, found himself surrounded by some drunks in a Green Bay bar. Favre cold-cocked one of them. In November of 1992, Moran lay on the turf at the Pontiac Silverdome with a torn MCL that ended his season. Favre, the first person to Moran, held the lineman's hand until the medical staff arrived. In 2001, Ravens defensive tackle Sam Adams sacked Favre after a long chase. Favre got up and embraced a 330-pound adversary along the sideline, smiling as he probably congratulated him making a great play. I mean, this goes on and on and on. A month later, defensive tackle Seth Payne. I tweeted this to Seth Payne today. He got a kick out of it. Seth Payne wheeled past Marco Rivera off the snap and had Favre dead to rights for what should have been a sack. Somehow Favre eluded Payne and hit his tight end for 16. As Payne walked away, Favre sheepishly gave him five for the great effort and patted him on the backside. Mortified, Payne acknowledged the gesture by softly touching Favre's hand. Like, this is the kind of stuff.
It was almost like he would congratulate guys for, hey, that was a heck of a rush, even though you didn't get me.
Not just players. Late in the 31-24 loss to the Lions at the Pontiac Silverdome, fans began chanting, "Green Bay sucks. Green Bay sucks." Catching his breath on the bench, Favre interrupted his coach to pump his left arm in unison with the leather lung fans.
You can't make it. And it's not, and that's the thing. There was never anything that came across as fake with Favre. And that's what you knew. That's just who he was. He wasn't trying to be a character. He was, look, this is how I play. This is my passion. And it was just, it was awesome. Like,
and a lot of quarterbacks are fake. A lot of quarterbacks care deeply about the narrative of their careers, and everything is unbelievably calculated. And Favre didn't give a damn. And that authenticity is freaking awesome.
Never got old. It never went away. He had it till the last time he played. I mean, it was, you felt like he could have just kept playing too. I mean, it was one of those where not like some of these guys we're watching now who are playing too long. I never felt like Favre was playing too long.
No, he could.
Right? I mean, he still had the physical skill set, was still there. He wasn't holding anything back.
That arm strength.
It never went away.
It never went away.
It was insane.
09. Well, 07 obviously takes Green Bay to the NFC Championship game. And he gets into his relationship with Ted, which was a lot more complex than I ever knew. Ted Thompson. It's remarkable. They knew each other for years and years. And then Minnesota, he thought that cemented his legacy, what he did with the Vikings that year, right through, and actually pointed to that game against your Saints as the game that cemented his legacy. And everybody probably remembers the interception, right, throwing it across his body. But what I didn't know was the penalty before
the
that.
Clock management, and the penalty. Brad Childress
screwed him.
Screwed that game up. Now they fumbled. They had chances early in that game too. Peterson fumbled. I mean, like I tell you, we talked about it on the show. They outplayed the Saints that day. They outplayed us. We shouldn't have won. But yes, those things that you can't. The coaching and time management never stops. 12
men in the huddle.
Right.
I mean, they only needed a few more yards.
Yeah.
And Favre thought
We weren't really slowing them down.
And you're beating the hell out of them.
Now, that was the year we were beating up everybody. I mean, we did it to Kurt Warner. We did it to, I mean, yeah, we don't have to get into that too much. But
you don't want to talk about Bounty Gate?
I don't know much about it, honestly, as far as I honestly think. I watch all our games, every game, right? That's how we played. I don't think, I never to this day think there was a bounty or anything. I don't. Do I think our team was getting after the quarterback and making sure that the quarterback knew that all day long you're going to get hit? Yeah.
And you believe that was Greg Williams's default rhetoric?
I heard it. You heard it on a regular practice, he might say, stuff like that. You know, Greg Williams, anybody that's been around Greg Williams, you don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. Yeah. Half the time you might not even, you know, you might laugh or just whatever. But let's face it. I mean, what is it? Cut the head off and the body will die. I mean, come on. I mean, you can't really even do that in football. I mean,
so, I think the specifics of like little 20-something were going at his ACL, kind of stuff.
It's a little rough. I always stand by that. I don't think anything was done on purpose or cheap, but we're certainly overly aggressive in every playoff game, not just against Favre.
And I do think, like, it's on YouTube. I mean, the whole speech that was – does anybody know who recorded that, by the way?
I think so.
People know?
I think.
Are they alive?
I don't know.
Greg Williams.
I don't like – there was a lot of things going on in that building that were happening. Yeah, the recording is just – how does that get out? You know, it's just so wrong.
Was that like – I wonder, were there players, coaches – how many people are in this meeting? You know what I mean? Like,
no, it's not a lot. So you can narrow it down. I think you can narrow it down.
Call them out on the podcast, Jim. I mean, if you want.
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe. But I know look, I love my Super Bowl ring. I love my time in New Orleans.
We kind of went down a rabbit hole here.
That one, I can't go
there. In your defense,
there.
In the Saints' defense, what I'll say is, like, if you were to listen to that speech,
yes.
Right, and you're not, and you're in your home, and you're not in a locker room, if you're just like displaced from the environment that is a testosterone-filled NFL locker room where people are paid millions to destroy each other.
You're right.
If you take that and put it into any other environment, it sounds terrible.
It does.
Within that environment.
Can't defend it.
Within that environment.
Every team. I feel like you'd hear that. I really do. I think certain coaches, that's every coach has a style.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think coaches that have that style, I think you hear that type of.
So basically, that's how David Culley is going to be talking to his Texans ahead of this brouhaha with the Bills.
Can we get in there and record that? I would like to hear that.
There are, you know, what's funny is like there's some coaches if they try, like that's very in character for Greg Williams.
But if they tried it,
players would just laugh
right away. You could tell the guys that this is like Rex. Rex can
that's Rex
can do it. He can say anything and you're listening. Like Eric Wood would talk about, right? I mean, say whatever. I'm ready to run through a wall after Rex would speak. There's certain coaches that can do it. I would say Marone.
No.
It's not going to work sometimes.
Mike McCarthy at Hard Knocks when he had the line like, oh, Jimmy F-stick and I don't know, whatever. And the camera panned to like CeeDee Lamb and Zeke Elliott.
Just like,
I thought they were going to laugh, honestly, because it was so weird and awkward and forced.
Forced is a good word.
You know? But yes, please, everybody out there, check out the Favre series. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
No.
It was a lot of fun to read. And Bob is the best writer to ever cover this game in our lifetime.
Insane.
For my money. So go longtd.com. Can subscribe. We still have our kickoff deal rolling, so when you subscribe annually, get a t-shirt, be in touch, all that good stuff. So segue here, Jim. I think what everybody can appreciate about Brett Favre, even now if you lived in Wisconsin and we're booing the hell out of him at Lambeau Field, is that desire to want to stick it to your ex-team.
Wow.
Like, you know what I mean?
Wow.
I think that the most hardcore Packer fans, a decade removed from that all, have to appreciate the fact that Green Bay told Brett Favre, and this is different than the Aaron Rodgers situation, right? Aaron Rodgers made it clear he wanted out. Brett Favre wanted in, and the Packers said, no, we've moved on. And as Bob wrote, he thought that if Favre like made up his mind right out of that Giants NFC Championship game that he wanted to stay, they would have kept him and maybe even traded Aaron Rodgers.
That was interesting.
Which, who knows what the NFL looks like then. But he says, you know what? All right, I'm going to spend this year with the Jets. I'm going to force my way to the Vikings. And I'm going to kick your ass. And that is awesome. Imagine if you get let go in any profession, and the competitive juices are going to be bursting out of you. I just think it's admirable in any walk of life. And now Tom Brady, the way Bill Belichick put it was like, oh, he chose Tampa Bay. But I think if circumstances were different, if, you know, we don't know what's really going on behind closed doors, but the Patriots seemed kind of ready to move on. They didn't really fight for Tom Brady.
It didn't seem like it, right?
It didn't feel like it.
And Brady should have wanted out of there. I mean, that team was if I'm going to keep playing, I want to win a Super Bowl, you know, and we're not putting together a roster right now that is going to do it. I admire that, but I think it's so hard to just go to another team and do what he did in Tampa. And it took, you know, let's face it, it took them, we've talked about this too, but it took them to the playoffs to really start figuring out how they were playing on offense together and really coming. And we talked about this. I mean, they could have lost to the Saints, you know, the Packers. Right. I mean, it wasn't like they just steamrolled through those teams. But it's remarkable to see Brady never really he doesn't badmouth the Patriots too much. I think he takes subtle little shots that you know that he's excited for, you know. And you said, I mean, there's no question he's gonna want to go up there and win and just
he's not gonna say it, right? Like Brett Favre didn't come out and say it after the Vikings.
Is this bad for me to say this? I hate to say this, in the whole scheme of the season, a non-conference game is pointless. Like, so when I say pointless for Tampa, say Tampa does lose this game, it will not affect their season at the end of the day. Tiebreakers, that on the tiebreaker list, like if you're in a tiebreak situation, out of conference isn't like at the top of the list, right? I'm trying to just tell you, like, to me, you have to like dig down as a Tampa. You're going, you know, the Patriots obviously aren't a team that Tampa is. Okay. Yeah. They're not a team they're not taking the ball down the field right now. They're not dominant running the ball. They're fighting for every yard rushing. You know, defensively, they're good, but they're not a special defense right now. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is I just don't think it's more of this is all about Brady going back to New England. And is he going to beat the Patriots? It's not like this monumental game that's going to change the season for Tampa or New England. I mean,
all the pressure's on Belichick, I think. I mean, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl
already.
Yeah.
I think he already made his point.
Right. They could lose. That's kind of how
I look at it. Like, if the Patriots beat them, I wouldn't sit there and say that Brady got that ring and could get another one this year after this game, even if they lose. The Patriots aren't going to the Super Bowl this year. They're not.
The intrigue to me is everything that Bill Belichick did in March, where they spent nearly $300 million.
They spent like they were going to go to the Super Bowl, right?
They did.
Or they spent like they thought Cam Newton was going to be healthy, or the old Cam Newton, and he isn't.
Do you think that was in their brain at that point when they're spending all this money on Matthew Judon and Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry? Are they thinking like, no, Cam Newton's going to be healthier and we're going to try to win with him?
Yeah, because you couldn't – first of all, when you're picking where they drafted Mac Jones, they didn't know they were getting Mac Jones at that pick. You can't know that. Okay, you could prepare for it, but you can't know that. The only thing you knew when you were spending that money on was Cam was our quarterback. Cam wasn't good last year and isn't getting healthier or younger. And that's not the Cam Newton that we all loved. I mean, out of college and took Carolina and got Ron Rivera and Sean McDermott head coaching jobs. You know, Cam Newton's the reason these guys are getting jobs. How are they doing without Cam Newton? How's Rivera doing? Now Sean got his quarterback, so Sean's going to do all right. He got
Your
Josh Allen.
Your life is so different if Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't go 4-4 at the end of the 2010 season for the Bills. Right? Buddy Nix wanted Cam Newton.
Oh, yeah. In fact, you know what's funny? I used to see Buddy at all the pro days, and I remember seeing him at that pro day. It was the worst pro day in the history of football. We all remember. It was like a day long. It was like the regular pro day was in the morning, kind of. You got there in the morning, you get some information, but they extended. It was kind of when the NFL Network or ESPN, somebody was covering it kind of for the first time when they started really covering pro days, because it was Cam wanted it It was a show. I mean, it was prime time. It was almost getting dark. I remember, like, what are we doing? This is a, like, the guy's the best player. Like, he's going number one. Like, who wouldn't take this guy?
You know, there is, it is interesting with Cam Newton, too. I wonder, yeah, maybe physically that was the physically, primary
you just
factor.
Never saw anything like it. There's he's a lot to handle,
too. Like,
he's a lot to handle.
I mean, he does an interview with his dad in the middle of a football field and says that he thinks his aura would have been a distraction. That's one hell of a way to put it. Like, imagine any other profession if you were just to say, yeah, they didn't want me. My aura, you know, it was too much of a distraction.
In New Orleans, they used to laugh at me because, you know, I wouldn't even, I would just say takecam.com. Like, just take them. Don't overthink this one. I've never seen, like, I never, that was, you know, I was a Southeast area scout. So yeah. I'm like, what else do you ever see a guy like this big with this kind of arm that can move like this? Like, did you always know where the ball was going? No. Okay. But, you know, I felt like he was a good enough passer.
And when he's that talented, you're going to put up with any of the other crap.
Well, what's Whaley always say, right? Production equals tolerance.
Completely.
And, you know, I know for a fact.
Really, it's not like he was a bad person. No.
He's a lot to handle.
He's just a lot to handle.
Day in and day. I mean, who gets in fights like he did at practice with Josh Norman?
Yeah.
And like it's a lot that you don't. I can't even.
I think Belichick was probably just thinking, all right, like you're kind of shot, and we're not going to force this
this year.
And nobody else picked him up.
He can't throw. Like, it's just anytime you watch him, it's over. Like I said it last year on the quarterback rounds. Like he was so low. I said, there's no way Cam Newton should ever be this low on any quarterback ranking list. I mean, it's over.
Does New England have a realistic shot to win this game, to you?
Yeah, I think anybody can beat anybody, right? Tampa is beat up a little bit on defense, in the secondary especially.
Secondary's maybe the worst in the NFL
statistically. It's really poorly. It's bad. And they're not exactly getting after the quarterback like they used to. So I would never count – that's – to go out to L.A. like that, right, national stage, game of the week, pretty much they were dominated. If Stafford was either overhyped or something in that first quarter, that game was going to be out of hand. He was missing everybody at first. But now you got to go – now you go up to Foxborough.
That's it's in Foxborough.
Right. So you're going back-to-back away games. That's always tough. It's, you know, for the Patriots, they're coming off a pretty embarrassing. They just got beat up pretty good by the Saints. So they're going to come out tough.
I like New England. I don't know if they're going to win the game, but I think it's going to be a good game.
Oh, I'm with you on this. I think it's going to be an entertaining game. They'll scheme it up. They'll scheme it up for Mac Jones. You know, Mac Jones didn't play as bad as that game against the Saints.
Is that right?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't good.
They don't want to throw the ball 51 times.
No, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
It got out of control, but. Like I said, it wasn't like the Saints sitting there and just dominating. There was some strange stuff was happening in that game, too.
I just think this is a game. You saw it in Green Bay at the end with McCarthy and Rodgers. Egos. I love the storylines here. I mean, this is such a beautiful clashing of egos. Where Brady says, I'm going to go to Tampa. I'm going to get them to sign all these guys. We're going to win a damn ring. They do. Belichick says, all right. I'm going to go spend $300 million on all these players. Just go buy on the cheap on quarterback. You know, maybe you weren't that important. But give me these guys on defense. Give me these tight ends. I'll figure it out. And we'll be good. And now they play each other. And I know it's one of 17. No, but
Brady's going to want it. Brady.
They're both going to want this game more than anything.
They're both going to. You're right. No, there's no question. And that's – Brady doesn't – he doesn't come across that he takes any game lightly, ever. Which is why he's still like we talked about before. Why is he still even playing football? I mean, what better way to go out than winning a Super Bowl? And here he is back for more. So yes, if he's playing, he wants to win.
As you jokingly put, Giselle must just be a handful.
Yeah, right? I don't know if I should have said that, but I couldn't figure out what else is keeping him playing. But
got called out.
I don't know. I didn't. I was kind of just joking. I was just trying to figure out why he wants to still play, but.
You're not alone. I've heard that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. All right. Tom Brady memories, anything from facing him 4 years?
You know, we were talking about a little bit. I said it's funny where, yes, we were always getting hyped up. This was measuring stick. You know, we'd be whatever, 3-3 or, you know, 7-6 or 6-7. And this is, here comes Brady. This is our way to put our stamp that we're.
Yeah.
And I always thought Brady's over there, like, I just want to get this, get me a W somehow and get me out of here. You know, that's how I felt like he was approaching the game, where we were like, this is our Super Bowl. This is where we can put ourselves on the map. And we're just trying to fight a way to make it in the playoffs. And he's already thinking about the playoffs. So, yes, but every coach measures themselves on how they play Tom Brady. It was very important to the D coordinators, Rex Ryan. How many times do we hear him talk about playing Tom Brady? And it was out of respect. Mm-hmm. Like, they just respected Brady so much because he was like a coach, you know, going, you know, he's preparing for them just like a coach does. That's how well, that's how much he studies the game, just like Drew Brees, all those guys that are so mentally on a different level. So I think that's the challenge for these coaches. They want to see how can I beat this guy who is so smart with football?
And they were with Tom Brady for X number of years. Yeah. So they know Tom Brady and they're, it's going to be a challenge for the for Bill Belichick and all of his assistants to stop a guy that they've been facing in practice for two decades.
It's going to be, it is going to, it's so funny to see that, like, and there's Mac Jones just, you know, he's trying to figure out how to get a first down right now. You know, how can I complete, how can I make an easy first down? Where it's, that's the difference in the maturity level of the game of football when it slows down for you. And you, like, talk Tom Brady, the game is slow for him, where right now, for all these rookie quarterbacks, the game is just so fast for them.
Well, you wrote about that in the Monas report. Let's dive right into it then. These rookie quarterbacks, that's a huge storyline right now. I think it's all of, I mean, the New York Jets, they didn't even bring in a veteran. They didn't bring in a threat. They didn't bring in
that. Was strange.
Just Zach Wilson's team.
That was a little strange.
Yeah, New England, they let Cam Newton go. Jacksonville has this, like, pseudo competition, but
that was Gardner, pseudo.
Yeah, it was,
which was another reason that team, that franchise struggles. Like, you knew he were playing. You drafted him number one. Like, come on, you know he's playing. It's not a competition.
Justin Fields is playing with maybe a JV team.
Oof.
Didn't look good himself.
No,
either.
He didn't.
And Trey Lance is waiting. So I don't know where you
want
to start.
I think that I wrote about that, how important culture is. But there's no textbook for any of this. I mean, getting in and playing is your best way to get through this. And who's, I said, I think the most important thing is with these quarterbacks is follow who, which guys are cutting back on their turnovers, which guys are starting to complete higher percentages as the season goes on. Those are the guys, first downs, moving the stick. Those are the guys that are starting to catch on to the offense. And then you've got to feel good. They're all talented enough to play. I mean, that's the obvious
like Mac
part.
Mac Jones, right?
Mac Jones is the one. Stuff. That is what he's done so far. Like, he has shown an ability to understand what they're asking him to do. Out of all the guys physically, he's the most limited guy. I mean, he's not this big arm athletic quarterback that we're used to seeing. Zach Wilson right now, he made some throws last week. They're going to be one of my Louis Locks this week, actually, going against Tennessee. But Zach Wilson showed signs of life for the first time for him this week, last week against Denver. Showed signs of life. Not that he played great, but I was watching. There was throws that, whoa, those are NFL throws. You know, Trevor Lawrence will sprinkle one in every now and then. He made a great throw for a touchdown, the shark, but then comes back with that awful decision on the flea flicker and just lobs one up for a pick six. Those are the things you got to eliminate. But these rookies are all talented. It's just a matter of, is the coach qualified? Is the culture good enough? And are these guys really, you know, smart enough to take it to the next level? Physically, we know they can do it.
For people who might have missed it, I mean, you weren't there in Buffalo when Buddy Nix drafted E.J. Manuel. Doug Whaley was
assistant GM.
You know, assistant GM, but as humble as all humble. Yeah. And, you know, you almost have to pull it out of him. But he didn't have E.J. as a first-round pick himself.
And we didn't have him rated that high in New Orleans.
You had him as a third or a fourth in New Orleans. Round. The developmental, maybe he's a starter down the road.
I think most of the league saw him that way. But, you know, you get enamored with it. Right. And E.J. was so smart. And, you know, obviously you see the size and the arm strength, and you're thinking, hey, this is – but I wanted to make sure people understood that I, you know, and it was really incredible for me to go from a scout to a director of personnel to be involved in these meetings. But when in 2014, when Kyle Orton was brought in to start over EJ, in a strange scenario, because it just seemed that EJ wasn't running the offense to how they wanted it run. And Marone, Whaley, myself, EJ, and we brought EJ's father in. And we're sitting there breaking the news to him that he's getting benched for Kyle Orton. And I remember looking at EJ, watching EJ's reaction, total professional, but he looked like a high school kid. You know, when was EJ Manuel ever failed at anything. Not that he was failing, but when has Eve ever been benched? Right? Always the star in high school, star in college. Just being told he's being benched. Right. His dad was, I'm like, it just was a weird, it didn't feel right. It felt like, do we know what we're doing? You know, I felt like they were looking at us like, what is the plan? Like, wait, you guys drafted him in the first, wait, it wasn't EJ's fault that we took him in the first round, the Bills did. I'm thinking they're looking at us like, well, what's the plan? Like, he was playing pretty well as a rookie. He had some injuries that set him back. And at the time, I believe we were, I think we might have even been 2-2 when we benched him. Like, it was a strange, strange scenario. And it just felt wrong how everything was being handled from our end. And I'm not even saying we were wrong. It just, what I wanted to make sure people knew, it, regardless of EJ was ever going to be talented or enough, the mental stress that that had to cause him as a probably a 22 or 23 year old, that's a lot to handle for anybody, you know, and being benched is a lot for a guy that's never been benched. So I just remember thinking, man, is this that now you're putting the mental stress on these guys? And that's why I'm watching Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. They're having to go to these press conferences now, and they're, when have they had to go to press conferences where they're the reason their team's losing, or they're like, why are you throwing all these? They've never experienced anything like this.
No.
The mental, we talk about this mental stuff is major.
It's huge.
And who can overcome it, who can fight through it. And that's what these rookies are battling right now. Not only are they battling how to go against these insanely smart defensive coaches, Davis Mills is going to see one this week, who didn't play horrible in that Thursday night game against Carolina, who has a great defense. So, you know, Mills showed me some stuff that was like, hey, he didn't look any different than these other rookies. He looked, for where they took him.
Yeah.
I'd be happy with the situation that he came into. I don't know. You know, we'll see a little more and see if he improves. But I mean, these guys all look like rookies. That's all it is. I don't think we have to overreact. I think they're all talented, but
the mental side of things,
the mental,
because I mean, it's hard to thread that needle. I agree with you. It's better to play and learn on the fly.
It's the only way to do it. It's the only way to do it. You know, that's why EJ, that's why it felt wrong. Like, why are we, you know, and I think we'd established that EJ needed to take a step back because they didn't feel like he was picking things up the way they wanted him to. So it was the mental maybe holding him back, but you know, I just felt like then it just started adding on to
maybe. I mean, the Bears roster isn't very good, but like, is that maybe what they were scared of waiting for injury to be the reason they play Justin Fields? Are they scared about the mental?
And then you put him in a situation. Well, why don't you play to his strengths, game plan his strengths, you know? For a guy that hasn't been taking all the starter reps.
Yeah, Myles Garrett had a comment, I think, where he was surprised at how the Bears used Justin Fields. They thought they'd get him on the move.
And what does that say? And what do you think Trubisky's thinking about here in Buffalo watching that game? Trubisky probably wanted to call Justin Fields.
Oh, yeah.
I say, hey, man, I get it. Because, I mean, what's Nagy done to prove that he's capable to bring along a rookie quarterback? Trubisky's looked pretty good in Buffalo with the small reps. I know it doesn't matter because it's a preseason, but, I mean, there's some ability there. I mean,
you feel for Fields, and you wonder if that was going through his mind in the moment. I'm sure he was more so just pissed that he fell, but like, he didn't look like a happy camper.
You know, when I remember that on draft night, I was thinking you're right. I was thinking to myself, he was more like, I'm just angry I fell. But I wonder, I'm starting to wonder.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on now. Is this team any good?
I mean, Quincy Avery, his private quarterbacks coach, I thought he put it best, where like Trey Lance is destined to succeed.
No doubt.
With that team,
the team
Justin
loaded.
Fields might be just every bit as good, if not probably better.
He was
better in college. Yeah, look at the team around him. Is he in the right situation? Do you even know? And that's what's so fascinating about this Favre stuff, too. The teams that liked him, the teams that didn't like him.
That was
like,
crazy, too.
He gets to Atlanta and they immediately trade for Billy Joe Tolliver, and he's the number two, even though he didn't even practice with the team.
Great names.
Yeah, they just
– right.
He didn't have a guy that believed it. What happens if Ron Wolf doesn't believe in Brett Favre?
So what happens –
Ron Wolf was the only person that wanted him when he was on the trading block.
So what
Nobody
happens,
else wanted
right.
him.
So if the Bears get rid of Nagy after the season, right, or midseason, what's Fields thinking now? Like, who's coming in? Who are you bringing in? But you know what I'd do if I was the Bears? I'd get rid of that coach and call it Ryan Day from Ohio State.
Yeah.
Let's go for it. Right?
Embrace it.
I've always said that. I always said if you were going to draft Tim Tebow, Yeah. Just hire Urban Meyer.
Totally.
And he, nobody else is going to have success with him.
And that's where the McCaskies and Ted Phillips, they seem more so just, okay, as long as the house isn't burning, we're not going to do anything. Well, the house might be burning in 2021.
Wouldn't Day get the best out of Fields? I would think. I would do everything I can to get that combination.
Out of all these rookie quarterbacks, who's going to like start turning that corner the soonest? And then who do you like the most long term?
Okay, the soonest has started for me with Zach Wilson. I saw it, and there's something with his ability that it's pretty incredible. He has shown the most ability to make like special NFL type throws. Trevor Lawrence, I'm not seeing it yet.
You were a little skeptical.
I was a little skeptical, and I still am.
Everybody was anointing him.
And I was like, hold on now. This isn't the most special quarterback we've ever watched. And he certainly was good. You know, Mac Jones is to me, his limitations are always going to be there. I'm a Fields guy. I need to see more of him. And man, it's funny how everybody, especially, you know, everybody in the talking heads are just, it's almost like people feel bad for him right now.
One net passing yard. Bad. 1 yard of passing.
Well,
offense.
You saw where he was on the rankings. I mean, it was bad, but I do feel like long-term he can be special. I really do. I love everything about Fields.
I still love Trey Lance.
I'm excited to see more, but I think, like we talked about, he's not ready yet.
Yeah, but if you're San Francisco, all right, I want your opinion on this game. But like Jimmy Garoppolo
is not good enough.
He's
not good enough. But when is Trey Lance ready to run their offense, the entire offense?
Put in a totally new offense. I think that's the point. Like
that will be interesting.
You're running the ball 30 to 40 times now.
Yeah.
And Trey Lance is going to run it 10 to 15 times. Like you're just unleashing something on the NFL with him.
I mean, we all want to see it.
I don't know, like Jimmy Garoppolo. Interviewed him. He's a nice guy. He's super likable. He's thrown into a tough spot. He took him to a damn Super Bowl. I get all of that.
They don't want him.
They don't want him. I mean, they traded 3 first-round picks
to get
Lance.
They don't want him, right. That's what I'm saying. As soon as he feels good about it, he's going in.
That drive was impressive, but to me what stood out is George Kittle.
Yeah, just throw the Kittle.
Debo Samuel.
They have monsters.
Juszczyk. I mean, those are three monsters making incredible plays. And what's that sandwich between?
You see where
between Jimmy Garoppolo's turning around and throwing it into the ground.
You see where he is on the rankings.
And the play clock.
Yeah, he's not the answer.
That's inexcusable against Aaron Rodgers.
How?
12
How
seconds.
Do you do that?
They've got no timeouts. You've got 3 timeouts.
How is that not factored in? Right. Can't happen.
I know. I had some nasty messages on that column I wrote one day saying that he only takes you so far. But I think that if you're San Francisco, fine. Keep him in there. Win 10, 11 games. Make the playoffs.
When is the time?
You're going to have to rip the Band-Aid off eventually.
God, would they – I mean, what if they are having success? Would he pull the – you know, would he put Lance in there as the season goes? I think we're just going to see more and more of Trey Lance.
No, they're probably trying to do the whole – Mahomes behind Alex Smith.
Just don't
Alex
play
Smith
that
was
first.
Good enough
Alex
to
Smith
win.
Played well that year, right?
Just like Alex Smith was good enough to win in San Francisco and they had Kaepernick.
And they
eventually went to Kaepernick and he took
the Super Bowl. They saw it. That could be the scenario.
They unleashed a different offense.
Yeah.
Too.
And that's who he does remind you of a little bit. It's a little, you know, there is some Kaepernick to his
there
game
is.
For sure, which is crazy. I think that's in San Fran, like how it works. Like,
you know, and I tell you what, guilty as charged, I thought the read option was dead, you know, and after Kaepernick was beat out by Blaine Gabbert and all that, but there's elements of it, of the RPOs everywhere. And if Lance can, I mean, you watch Lamar and how he holds that mesh point to the last
second. It's incredible.
It's unbelievable.
I'm telling you, I don't know what happened to Marquise Brown in that Detroit game this week. That 66 yard field goal didn't need to happen. If he catches the ball, Lamar Jackson was making throws that were phenomenal.
He cost
phenomenal.
The River Rats a fantasy football win. I'll just say that, Marquise Brown.
I had to hurt.
But
Lamar is on it. He's on a level right now.
He
said he's a little – I wonder how he is right now because I did read they're going out to Denver this week. That game's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
My top two quarterbacks right now for 3 weeks, Bridgewater versus Lamar.
Well, you know what? That's
Louis Locke.
It's probably a good spot to close up our main for the week. And also, before I forget, we put it out there on Go Long, and Isaiah McKenzie tweeted out himself, but the Isaiah McKenzie show
That's
is going to
awesome,
launch
man.
Monday.
You got it all covered. You got GM, former personnel people. You got,
oh my God,
long veteran Hall of Fame writer McGinn, yourself, and now we got a player in the Go Long community.
I figured we'll just keep building it up. You know, I want to keep the long. We're not going to sacrifice the writing. We want to keep the features cranking. But like, I know how people consume content differently. Not everybody has time to sit down and read a story for 20, 25 minutes. So pop your headphones in, listen to this podcast, listen to the Ty and Bob pod if you're a subscriber. And the Isaiah McKenzie Show will be 10 episodes, 5 of which are going to be live at Mister's Bar and Lanes in East Aurora, New York. Love so it. Get your reservation in. All the details on golongtd.com. So just follow the prompts. We have the 5 dates up there. October 1st is the first date. If you are a subscriber, if you're a paid subscriber, you are guaranteed a table. Like, you're going to get first dibs.
How should
Mister's
be.
Knows.
How should
you know what? I mean, we're going to do something for them. So you get that table. Get to meet Isaiah McKenzie. Get to know him through these episodes. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I've talked a little bit about it. The impetus, Jim, is, and as you know, the league, as it explodes in popularity, I feel like the fans know less and less and less about the players. And
strange.
I think that it's a weird dichotomy that as social media blows up, as the game blows up, the league is becoming more and more controlling. There's some teams are better than others. Jacksonville Jaguars, we've talked about it. Come on down, hang out with LaVisca Chenault for an hour, get to know him. And we put that story out. Other teams aren't that accommodating. They're a little more paranoid. They're a little more push the podium. They're a little more centralized messaging. Oh, here's who we have at the press conference today. Everybody write the same story. So I just thought with Isaiah McKenzie, here's a guy who's a hell of a lot of fun. He's got an amazing life story. He's fun as hell. I mean, the pranks that he pulls, he talks about covering himself in ketchup when he's 11 years old and his grandma thinks he's dead and they're calling the medics. It's scary. But yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. 5 of them at Mister's, 5 of them on Zoom, exclusively at Go Long. You can see the video, listen to the audio, and we'll also have it out on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, because I know people listen there as well. But hope everybody listens, watches, and comes on out to Mister's. It'll be fun.
Non-stop Go Long coverage all week long.
That's all. Hey, got to get while the getting's good.
Pleasure. I like that.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you here on the new Go Long.